Blog Talk. Hello, everyone. No, you didn't surf into a different station. This is our show. You are on BTR, blogtalkradio.com, and cosmicdimensions.com. You have surfed into Awakenings, part of the Converging Flow. And hello, everyone that's tuning in right now in the chat and via iTunes later. So the theme right now, Come As You Are. That's what we had a little Nirvana on. I have many sides to me. I am Michelle Mache, and I am your host and co-pilot, partner in crime, in spiritual crime, fun, partner in fun. As one of the listeners, Little Light, also known as Debbie, says, we all come together in this spiritual playground. And we have a great guest today, and so the focus, my energy, my feeling of the day of Come As You Are is so perfect because we do have back with us Neil Haig, who hails out of UK, but international traveler and artist, and definitely is very individualized, very unique, very connected to the stream, to the flow of the all that is, and reflects that in his writings and books as well. So I really look forward to chatting with him and hearing about his projects and hearing from all of you. So if you do want to give a little hello and share what you are about right now and what's important to you, call me, please, at 347-539-5122. You can also tweet me at Awakenings Tweet. Soon to change that. I'm going to shorten it somehow. I think I'm coming close to the acronym or metaphor or, you know, icon or avatar that will reflect at least for a little while, since I've changed it a few times. Anyway, I'm always evolving and changing, and Kurt likes that spiritual crime, LOLO, laugh out loud. Yeah, it's really all about the connecting, isn't it? That's what keeps us coming back and coming back. Welcome to those that are just getting also on the phone lines coming up. I can see you listening by phone. Thank you so much. And if you do have a question and you're listening by phone, if you just press 1 on the keypad, then I'll get an alert that you the spirit is moving you to say something or ask something. And if you're in the chat, if you type in caps, that really helps. So I'm feeling I'm always feeling connected and in a flow of some sort. Sometimes it's a bumpy flow, you know, sometimes it's a very quick flow or hectic flow, sometimes it's a very full flow, but I'm always in a flow where I really feel our connection to all of you, to everyone and everything, and feel that insight or inspiration coming through. But it's been extra bumped up, if you want to say, because of attending the 140 conference, and you probably heard, some of you might have heard about it Wednesday. I chatted about it, but it's Jeff Pulver's 140 conference, which was all about Twitter and social media. And really, you know what? It really was not about Twitter per se. It is about using that as a tool or a platform. And as Ben Parr says of Mashable, if you're looking at Twitter just as a tool, then you are a tool. I really like that, actually. Pretty graphic, but pretty true. Because the deal is, it's all about connecting. It's all about the consciousness. It's all about the outpicturing or extending out of consciousness into a form that allows all of us to connect more completely, share more completely. This is, it's such a divine manifestation of the Aquarian age. You know, the internet is ruled by Aquarius, you know, and Uranus in that sense, also because Uranus rules Aquarius as well as Saturn ruling Aquarius planetarily. So you are going to see more forms that reflect our connectedness, more forms that reflect the formless part of us, the sensing, feeling part of us, the subtle energy part of us. And then it's up to us, you know, the ego personality part of us, to use these forms consciously. An amazing situation happened, a little tickle, because those of you that have been listening to me for a while and coming to the show and participating, know I love busting myths. I may play Jill Purse's overtone chanting on Awakenings Radio. I might play a little Nirvana, like I did today. Maybe some music by Thunderbeat or some chanting by Simon Ashan and me. Eclectic. It just where the spirit moves me, I suppose. Because to me, it's all coming from one source. I don't feel there's this, you know, two source. There's the one source, the source that is all of us, that connects all of us and that is all of us. The subtle energy, the Akasha, if you will, that divine flow of cosmic energy or the creative unconscious is working through us, expressing through us as us. So to me, it's all coming from one place. So I could have a lot of different belief systems about it coming from different places and in different ways, and that's all fine. But for me, I like to just keep it kind of simple, stupid, one source. Okay, let's just keep it easy. What you do with the consciousness or you do with the technology, what you do with your awareness is one thing, but there's nothing wrong with consciousness, awareness. There's nothing wrong with innovation or technology. There's nothing wrong with the forms that we create. I mean, even if you say a gun on one level is a mighty fancy creation. I mean, that's a wonderful little tool. But it's the use for it. We get into what are the uses for these things. But anyway, in one of my classes, I had a person come up after my workshop and said that, oh my God, I'm so glad that you mentioned that you like technology and that you like social media and, you know, things like Facebook or Twitter. And actually, Twitter is my fave right now just because of the flow, the stream, the meaningful connections there, you know, interdimensionally as well as internationally. And she said, you know, I work in social media, and you maybe you're listening. And I said, oh, great, you know. And she said, no, I've talked to a lot of people that are spiritual or spiritual teachers, and they're so against technology. They're so against computers or cell phones. And they said, you know, it takes you off your path or it's not spiritual. And I said, how can it not be spiritual? We're spiritual beings. Innovation or creative ideas come from divine mind. I mean, is the computer less valuable or less spiritual than the bicycle? I mean, think about it, you know. The cell phone is bad. It comes from bad spirit. I mean, I think to me, if people just calm down and kind of ask common sense, because you can't have it, you know. And those of you that are out there that know who you are, this oneness movement, that everything, we're all one and everything is all one, you can't have it both ways. You can't say everything is one except for some things. Everything comes from God except for some things. Everything is conscious except for some things. And that's kind of what's been happening, you know. So and she was just ecstatic. She said, oh, because I love what I do and I work online. And I said, yeah, well, where do you think that idea came from? It didn't come from our rational aspect of us, the logic brain. It didn't come from our surface mind. We don't create from our surface mind. And Grand Elf is putting my bicycle as a spiritual tool. Mine too, but so is my computer, and so is my cell phone, and my iPhone, and the BlackBerry, and my wireless network. You know, I love it. All the innovations, the great art, the great books, you know, everything in my mind, even the most, perhaps as we would say on an ego level, a personality level, the most awful thing is still coming from consciousness, is still coming from God. It may be a little twisted, it may be a little perverted, but in essence, everything is a cry or an expression of love. Everything is a manifestation of love. Some things just are of a perhaps more expanded vibration. They're perhaps more life-enhancing. It reminds me of a little picture. I just got a little flash, you know, of a child. It could be a guy or a little boy or a little girl, but handing their mother some flowers. Let's say Mother's Day. Okay, let's do a Mother's Day thing. You know, so you're getting some flowers, and the flowers are kind of wilty because, let's say it's going to be Grand Elf. Grand Elf in the chat was riding on his bicycle and had flowers, but then he stopped to, you know, go to the beach and with his bicycle. And then coming home, he decided to go in the meadow. So by the time he gets home, those flowers are really wilted and they have a lot of dirt on them. And then he gives them to his mom. But there's so much love there. Even though those flowers are all wilty, she just loves them, because it's the connection. And maybe someone gives the mom some flowers that are just so beautiful with the big ribbon and bow, and they just came out of the, you know, special refrigerator, the flower refrigerator, whatever it's called. But she really loves those wilty flowers. So again, it's not the form. It's what's the intent, what's the consciousness behind the form. We have to focus on the consciousness before it's made manifest. Ooh, I love it. Michael Manuel, oneness is in the eye, the big eye of the beholder. Wow. Yeah. And Tammy put in the chat, perhaps it is that everything can be seen, in quotes, quote unquote, seen as spiritual if we have the eyes to see it as such. I think so. I really do. And I see in my own evolution that the more that I can look through those eyes and feel that all is coming from spirit, because that is the truth. There's no good spirit or bad spirit. You know, it's all, if you think about it, even the most, you know, even a bully that's bullying somebody is doing that out of trying to get attention, trying to get love, trying to get approval or attention, trying to connect, you know. So I think that in our trying to connect, some people do it in perhaps a way that isn't so awake, aware, evolved, or the vibratory frequency is not so expanded or so high. But doesn't mean if you look at the source that you begin to see what the intent was. Now that doesn't mean you have to go hang out with these people or whatever, but just in the inner plane, in the inner eye, you begin to see them as they truly are and not by their conditioned ego or their conditioned responses. You begin to see the spirit in them, the truth in them. And that sends them a little wave of light, a little flash of light. And that little light has a way of penetrating in. You know, if we all did that more and more, if we saw beyond the wounding, it would really have such a transformative effect on everyone, everything, as well as ourselves. So, just got a little picture in the chat from Grand Elf's bike. Pretty amazing. It's got a motor on it. And very cool. Oh, and homemade and well-loved. Very cool. See, that creation, and those of you that are not in the chat, those that will be listening later, maybe it'll be archived in the chat room, but a very cool black bicycle with a a little motorized bike. So very cool, very cool. All coming from that creative unconscious that is us, that consciousness that wants to manifest, wants to create. And I see that as part of that converging flow that I speak of so much, is that we're all coming from different sectors, different arenas, different areas of focus, different areas of life, different lifestyles, different beliefs even. But what transcends all of that is consciousness and the awareness of being conscious beings in form and creating form and sharing through form, that heart connection. So that's what connects us, is the realization of the formlessness, that we are spiritual beings, that we are being more led and led from the heart and following the heart of the matter, getting to the heart of the matter to know what matters to us, that we're self-expressing, creating, and sharing these creations with respect. So I feel you're going to see much more creative expression, much more self-expression, much more communication, much more art, much more music in many different ways, many new forms. So I really find it, I feel it's an exciting, exciting times. And Debbie is putting in the chat, letting your creativity out is letting your soul out to play. Oh, that's beautiful. Not that we should come by shoulds, but that's a great tweet if someone wants to tweet that out. Letting your creativity out is letting your soul out to play. And that's really all we're meant to be doing here, this creative play, this play of consciousness. I think living from that is allowing ourselves to live more completely, actually. So let's see. I'm going to be calling Neil. He's a visionary artist. I love it. I love it. So we're going to see what he has been up to. And we will hear the European ringy dingy that I love. Reminds me of home. Visionary. Hello, Neil.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Michelle.
Hey, welcome. Great. Welcome to Awakenings.
Wonderful. You know, I was thinking about the timing, and I wasn't sure whether or not you guys had the same idea of the daylight saving as what we have here.
We do, but I don't think we started it yet. Did you start yours?
We started it, and I was laughing at the idea of it. It was a very, very old and dear friend of mine had sent me this wonderful picture of an old Indian. And it was a great quote that went with the picture, and he said something along the lines of, when told the reason for daylight saving time, the old Indian said, only the government would believe that you could cut a foot off the top of a blanket and sew it to the bottom and have a longer blanket. And I thought, that's hilarious. Wonderful, wonderful. So anyway,
I know, is there any way to abolish that? I mean, it is like, it's such a weird, it's like, pretend it's not dark outside right now. Just pretend. It's like, okay, I don't see that. I don't see the stars out there. I know.
It's a funny time of the year as well, isn't it? It's that kind of odd period when what's invisible, and when the veil kind of starts to thin, and we have this lovely feeling of all these otherworldly dimensions filtering into this kind of physical reality. So it's quite a lovely time in terms of creativity, I find, anyway.
I do too. I get excited around this time. I also follow the Celtic Druid, and it's also actually the Jewish New Year. It's all around the whole time. This October time period, it's September, October, is just, to me, there's a lot of winding down, letting go, refocusing, and new coming in all at the same time.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it's true, because this time of year, I was saying this the other day to somebody, that you probably know this anyway, the Samhain, or the Halloween date, the marker in this calendar is actually a point of new year, isn't it, for the Celtic calendars. So we have this period where there's an ebbing and flowing, and we only have the idea of a new year based on the more Gregorian, Babylonian calendar, which is the one that we have blessed them from the Vatican, which is a different understanding of time. And time in that sense really starts to have no meaning, because time really is and some people don't like to hear this, but time is an illusion in that sense because of the different facets of time and how they overlap.
Mm.
I've been working with this for years, looking at one of the hardest concepts to put into painting and visual form is the understanding of time, which is what I've been doing for projects in the last couple of months. Since we last spoke, in fact, I've been very busy with various projects that I've looked at different layers and understanding of consciousness and time. So.
Oh, wow. Definitely want to dive into that. Now, one thing I didn't know, so our new year, because I'm learning something new here, I love it. Our new year is based on, you're saying, the Babylonian?
The Gregorian calendar, yeah, the one that came out of has come out of the Orthodox religious structure, which
I knew was that, Roman Greek,
and then in modern times, I think, I mean, without me digging and delving into facts, I think we're looking at something like a period around the 16th century when the Gregorian calendar was actually cemented and being used ever since. That's why we have a strange understanding of odd months and odd days. I mean, what kind of calendar, I suppose, would have very odd days like 28 and 31 and 30? It's a very uneven calendar based on tracking a particular structure. From my understanding of it, I mean, this could probably be looked at and debated more closely, I suppose. But my understanding has always been that there are different types of calendars, and the Gregorian calendar, the Babylonian template, works with the 12 signs of the zodiac and the solar element.
The
Babylonian is the original blueprint. You know, everything goes back to Babylon in terms of religious blueprints, whether they're Judeo-Christian or Islamic in that way. They come out of this period in time, which was very much when religion was being nurtured and created in terms of the temple structure. So all of the understandings of the precession of the ages and the understanding of astrology and the plotting of the orbit of the earth around the sun and all of these things that we had prior to the Dark Ages, when everybody decided the earth was flat, which almost seemed like a religious conspiracy in many ways. Because the hierarchy knew damn well that the earth wasn't flat, but it was good to tell people that because it actually made them have a limited self of sense and also a limited self and understanding of the universe, the wider universe. So anyway, the idea of the calendar in that sense works with the sun and the twelve astrological Babylonian star signs. But obviously we have others in different cultures, and we also have the understanding of the moon, and we have the even 13 moons of 28 days or so, which is a different structure again, and that's another subject in itself. You know, so you have the Mayan calendar, you have the Gregorian calendar, and you have obviously the Celtic, and a lot of these native indigenous calendars are pretty much the same when you start looking at them. But you know, the main focus has always been the sun and the moon and the stars for that, really. And it's something that's cropping up in my work in recent months, because obviously I'm doing that kind of thing anyway, generally, Michelle.
Yeah.
But I'm doing new work at the moment, and for an exhibition that's coming up at just before Christmas in the UK, which is a long, long way for some of your listeners to come to.
Well, actually, we have, it's Awakenings Radio is quite international. We have some people, obviously England, France, some of the islands, so all over. So. Yeah, actually, one of the Dennis also that's in the chat room is from the UK as well. So, but tell us a little bit about your, and then I do want to ask you something with time, because I got something through a channeling I had done that time and how we look at it and monitor it and even the calendars are going to be changing. So, and actually, when you think about it, I don't know how you've been experiencing life, but there is such a different flow of relating. I know many people are not doing a 9-to-5 lifestyle, or, they're up 2 in the morning, 3 a.m., sleep a little, up again, creating, doing, but just almost this round-the-clock kind of activity.
It's an interesting subject. It is. It's cropping up all the time in conversations, in circles, yeah. It's very appropriate, Michelle, because I feel that what's happening from a creative point of view is that there's a tremendous pull from the heart, and this is something that is has an intelligence of its own, which is without, we can talk about this a little bit later if you like, but this goes into something that relates to a higher understanding of who we really are. And then we have the mind, which obviously has different parts to it. It has the left side of the brain and the right side of the brain. And the left side of the brain is very much focused, as I've been saying and others have been saying over the years, it's very much focused on the structures we have in society, not least linking into the calendars and the timing frequencies that are part of the five sense physical reality.
Mm-hmm.
Now, when that starts to change, there's obviously there's a lot of there can be a lot of frustration. And in fact, what I found interesting is, and when you look at this, and I do an awful lot of driving, especially I have done over the years. I'm not wanting to do as much recently. And I was saying this to an old friend. Now, driving is becoming quite draining. And when you look at the statistics on road rage and traffic accidents and things like that, and you look at all of that, and you tie that into the frustration and this kind of craziness of trying to get somewhere quicker and get things done faster, you know, based on the idea of this society trying to keep a pace with itself. It's almost like trying to run like a mouse running around in one of those wheels,
mm-hmm.
trying to kind of keep going with everything, but actually not getting very far. And what's happening is that time is actually coming to an end. Not time as in eternal time or the idea of infinite understanding, but this crazy time that has been manufactured on different levels.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, when you look at it, Michelle, the idea of money and time being intricately connected, which they are, and the whole idea of what money has become, and when you get into that, and you can get into that on another subject in a deeper level, but the whole thing has been set up almost like a game, and a crazy game at that.
Yeah.
Keep people enslaved within
that's
a system
right.
structure that
yes.
makes them crazier. And what's happening
yeah.
now is that people are getting crazy. And with what's going on in the world in terms of the recession, the idea of that now becoming an economic collapse, even though on the news you hear things like, I mean, recently I heard in the UK that you know, the U.S. economy was on the rise. I don't personally truly go with that, because when you look at the nature of what's really happening, and how you tie that into all of the understandings of the prophecies as well, if you want to look at those at some point, then no, time and money are actually coming to an end on one level, and no doubt they'll be replaced by something else. Now, what they're replaced mm-hmm. by could be. You know, it depends on what we choose and what we imagine, really, and it depends on how much we are indoctrinated, I suppose, to believe in a certain path and a certain route. And that's something in itself, you know. That's a bigger subject as well.
But now you brought up something I think very important. I think we're moving away from that which is manufactured. I agree with you. I think what I'm seeing with a lot of people that I work with, what is causing the stress, though, is that people are not following their own internal timing or inner rhythm. They're following the it's no longer working to follow, as you say, the manufactured or unreal schedule and requirements or obligations of that, whether on a monetary level or a, you know, it's all resources, it's all energy. So where it's energy as money or energy as, you know, organized energy that we call time, because that's to me what I look at, it's organized energy. So people are busting at the seams, but if you think about it, consciousness never sleeps. So we do have a chance to tap more into the higher, more expanded part of us.
Definitely, I couldn't agree more with you. It's one of those things, isn't it? It's the idea, and I've seen this while I've been sitting quietly and working in the ways in which I do with the work that I do. But I've read an awful lot of material over the years, and it's true. There is an energy, a flow to life,
mm-hmm.
and that flow is very symbolic of. Well, of various things. I mean, one of the things I think of is the idea of cellular structure
mm-hmm.
and this kind of an amoebic kind of fluidity that is neither primitive nor kind of mindless. It's actually pure intelligence, an intelligence of the heart.
Mm.
And this intelligence is almost contained to such a degree that we don't even acknowledge its existence. And when you look at William Blake's work or other visionary artists or people that have got in tune with their own levels of imagination and infinite awareness, they've obviously used other things, other symbols that relate to religion and spirituality. But what we fundamentally try to get across is this idea of this eternal river, this flow, this ocean, that is contained within this, in many ways, in visual, it's an egg, contained within this idea of, trapped within this eggshell, this body.
Mm-hmm.
And the body in itself is no more, when you look at the science and you look at the understanding, especially in recent years, it's no more than a very, very beautiful, sophisticated biological computer.
Mm.
Consciousness operates beyond the computer. And from a creative point of view, it is consciousness, when you're tapping into those realms, that is working through you, a child would play with a computer PlayStation, a game, and they're actually so engrossed in the game that for that period of time they believe that they are the person who's going through the different levels in the game, rather like we take our own biological body, computer, through different levels of reality. Through the game itself, which is this world that we live in. But if we were to kind of just take a step back and we were to understand that, then there's more to it than meets the eye. And one of the things that relates to this fluidity is not only the idea that something else is operating the joystick, there's also another level of mind and a level of imagination that is going beyond this idea of the physical body. And, you know, it's beautifully captured in those stories of Plato's cave. You know, the Greek philosopher, where he talks about the Denisians being chained in a cave and facing this wall all their life, symbolically, and all they see in front of them are these shadows that pass on the wall. They hear noises that go with the shadows, but all they do is see the shadows and the voices as being connected. Now, if they were released from their shackles at any point, and they were able to turn and see the great fire behind them, and not only the fire, but people and other, other entities or people moving around, carrying objects and talking and going about their daily life, they'd suddenly realize where the shadows are coming from. So we step back and consciousness intervenes at that point, and we go, oh, I see. This is not reality. There's much more to it. But the most beautiful part of this story, that's something that I've looked at, is the idea that, you know, you could go a stage further. You could take the shackled human beyond the fire and leave the cave into the wonder of daylight and nature outside of the cave, which would be another level of reality, a completely different level of understanding, which opens the mind to other things. So, you know, this idea of this fluidity and time and consciousness that we were talking about earlier, and the idea of the cellular structure I was mentioning, I truly feel, and I've seen this in books, scientific books, but there was an artist actually, his name was Giordano Bruno, and I've talked about him in the past, and he was a great illustrator and artist, but he was also a priest, and he was a Dominican priest, actually, but he was turned against by the Brotherhood. And one of the things that he was looking at was astrophysics at that time, which was relatively unknown in that period. And one of the things he was talking about was the idea of cellular structure being very much connected to the idea of utopia and what we call golden cities or the New Jerusalem.
Right.
And the fluidity, and when you put cellular structure like prokaryotic cells under microscopes and you look at them, and as this wonderful author points out, the author of the book I'm thinking of, her name was Giuliana Conforto, an Italian physicist, she was talking about the similarity between those images of cellular structure and some of the illustrations of Bruno and the text of Thomas More and people like that. I think there were other writers as well. I can't remember the name of the other writer, but Thomas More was the famous one, the book Utopia, I think it was. Mm-hmm. And when you understand this, then you start to sense this idea that utopia, freedom, consciousness are with us all the time.
Hello, I'm back. That was very strange. I'm going to get, we're talking about higher consciousness, so obviously the energy is flowing, and then I got booted out of off the switchboard, and logging in, it kept saying that the pin I was entering was not my pin, but it was my pin, because I know my pin. I am so loving this.
Hello.
Welcome back.
That was interesting, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think I may have just put my head against the phone and disconnected, or was it other forces at work?
Well, it might have been other forces, because then you got booted off of the switchboard, then I got booted off, and then I tried to log back in, and it said that the pin I entered is not my pin, and I'm like, I know my pin, plus I'm looking straight at it to see what the number is, but...
around what I was saying, Michelle, I was just saying that, you know, that we have utopia within us. It's something that's within all of us, and it's so obvious when you kind of start looking at imagery like that and dealing with that on a personal level. But being disconnected is what we are, you know, in many ways.
Yeah.
And a lot of people feel disconnected. And this is why the craziness and the frustration and the anguish and the pain and the suffering that we have in daily life, you know, from...
Back again. There is something very strange that happens with the energy when I am calling guests in. Very strange, Neil. It's real. Okay, well, if I believed in conspiracy theories, this would perhaps constitute that, because every time I'm trying to get on with this person, it is hanging up, and now it's saying that I'm already on with Neil. Very interesting. Okay. Okay, here we go again.
Hello.
Neil?
Hello.
That was strange. I was saying before you got disconnected again, if I believed in conspiracy theories, this would be more time than I would.
Well, I wouldn't underestimate other forces, Michelle, that they're also equally at work in the world.
Ew.
So, you know, you have different things going on, and it's not so much a conspiracy theory, but you have forces that are also of a malign, lower level shadow reality. Mm-hmm. That are also part of us and part of other things. So the digital machine sort of cellular world that we live in, you know, from microchips through to digital televisions and so on and satellite technology, all of this is a lower energy, a cold light, as Blake called it, you know, it's, mm-hmm. or Swedenborg and other artists and thinkers throughout history. And Bruno was another, they called it a cold light. It didn't sustain or give off the true light or the energy or the warmth that heaven would give off. mm-hmm. if that was embodied on Earth in that sense. Mm-hmm. So, you know, technology and machines and crazy ways of thinking and running around like a blue-arsed fly, as we say over here in the UK, then that would be, that would be part of that structure. Mm-hmm. So maybe sometimes, these things happen and we don't realise what's going on different levels. We have other things happen to us and we don't fully understand the bigger level of energy that is impeding on us at that time. I mean, I often see people, I don't know about you, but I often see people like, and I could be, I've been told I'm crazy for this, but, you know, what in for a penny, in for a pound? people are walking around almost as though they're locked into some sort of energy grid. So they actually are almost like those, you know, those kiddies' toys that have like magnets underneath them.
Oh yeah.
Moving them around on a surface. Well, in many ways, that's what we're doing. That's what mm-hmm. humanity has become. We're not focusing, and we're not living through that intuitive, heartfelt level of reality, which will go in many ways. It will just go with the flow. It will do things that would seem completely and utterly nonsensical if the mind was to kick in and say, you can't do that. What about so-and-so? And what about your wife? And what about, you know, the kids? And what about the people at work? And all that kind of stuff that kicks in with the mind.
Mm-hmm.
But the heart is saying, do it. Go there, you know, be mm-hmm. part of that. Express yourself in that way. And when I say this or when other people say this, it doesn't mean necessarily that all of a sudden that the game, the pieces on the board, are kind of attacking each other, or there's a free-for-all. It just means that the mechanism starts to break down that is actually controlling people. It's a different thing completely.
Yeah, and what do you think of that? Because I'll definitely notice that it's because I've been keeping track of this, and some people, oh, it's this or it's that, it's your Skype or it's VTR. No, it's definitely on certain topics and certain people, and specifically certain topics when the energy begins to really expand. This will kind of happen. So I'm just wondering, and you as an artist and a visionary, because you're working a lot with form, consciousness, or the formless within form, and allowing the consciousness to come through you to create something. Do you feel that the, let's say, the vibratory frequency or vibratory level of a lot of the forms we have now may, I don't want to say have trouble holding this higher vibrational frequency, or maybe it's just they're being affected by the shift that we're in?
I do see that in some ways. I do see the difference between, I mean, it's a little bit like the difference between somebody who's walking with their head down, carrying the weight of the world in terms of vibrational frequency, and somebody who is actually so removed from the world that we might look upon them as a pauper or a homeless person or something like that. But they're actually carrying a higher understanding of who they are
mm-hmm.
within the world that we dwell in. So mm-hmm. I do notice a difference. And like I say, it goes back to what I was saying before, this idea of trying to keep up with everything, keeping up with the pace of time. And that's the resonance, because ultimately what we are, what we really are,
mm-hmm.
at the core of our being, from my understanding and my the way I've got into all of this, is that we are pure energy.
Mm-hmm.
We are light. Mm-hmm. And light manifests itself in different ways. And you have different ways of understanding energy, not least through the four main components or aspects, you know, in terms of electromagnetic light and nuclear, strong and weak electromagnetics. And then you have, obviously, gravity. And gravity is the big one, because in many ways gravity it comes from the Latin of gravitas, but it's actually the word that relates to weighing us down. Now the soul is weightless.
Mm.
So in that sense, gravity is something that would be something that is a constant reminder to us that while ever you're in the physical body, which consciousness is viewing the world through, almost like a viewfinder, you know, like the idea of the PlayStation, then you know, these elements are at work with each other. I think the key thing is and this is one of the things that I do when I'm working, and what we have to do to be able to get through the times that are ahead of us and the changes that are coming around us, is that we have to remember who we truly are and what we're here to do. So what I would say is that we have to take a step back. We have to remember that we're consciousness experiencing ourselves through this vehicle, which is a physical mm-hmm. body. Mm-hmm. We are not our physical bodies.
Mm-hmm.
We are not our names, our lineage. We're not any of these things. We have chosen to give validity to these things in this time that we're in, but we're not. We're from a greater place. We're from a higher level of understanding. And once we grasp that, once we understand that as human beings, then you know, we start to act on our true level of ourselves. We stop being human, and we become human beings, which is two different things.
Mm-hmm. Mixed up. And how do you feel that? Do you find yourself creating differently? I was going to say working, co-creating, working differently.
Yeah.
Now, because of this shift.
Yeah. The funny thing is, it's a strange thing talking about cycles and time and energy. One of the things that I've noticed recently is how much. This is I'm talking now about my own personal mm-hmm. artwork. I've noticed how much that has started to go back to almost looking like it used to look when I first embarked on this journey, but with a different level of sophistication and understanding. And it's almost as though, you know, time does repeat itself, but when we're allowing the higher levels of consciousness, then it elevates us at the same time. It's rather like the spiral effect, you know, the idea of climbing up the DNA in that sense, or the idea of taking that spiral staircase in Jacob's ladder, you know, the idea of the dream. And I think that's what's happening. So, I mean, from my work point of view, then, yeah, I've also noticed that we're being very resistant on one level also to embracing each other as brothers and sisters in terms of community. And what I mean by this is not the fact that we are being forced into community, because I always love this idea of the political nonsense of forced globalization and forced United Nations and forced European economic communities and all this rubbish, which is nothing to do with how we would come together if we came together from a true spiritual understanding, which relates to the heart. And again, it goes back to our allowing our heart connections to take the lead in our personal lives and not the mind. Because in truth, Michelle, when you really do look at this, there really is only one mind. We think
That's
we've got
right.
individual minds, but the mind is a beautiful computer, again, you know, shaped and perfected so that we can experience this reality. Outside of this reality, then everything is infinite in that sense. So this is why people have near-death experiences and other phenomena where they actually come back and they see the body and they give us a true understanding of the fact that we exist beyond the physical world.
Mm.
So, yeah, you know, this is changing. The work's changing. We're going to change. In fact, I swear that we're going to be seeing other levels of reality. We're going to be seeing other people differently. The veil is lifting. We are looking at the world differently. What we held dear in terms of politics and status and the economy and the whole understanding of how we live in this world, it's almost like playing the Monopoly game and getting bored with it.
Yeah.
Because how many times can you go and collect 200 and then think, I've had enough of this.
Mm-hmm.
There's got to be a better way of living. I mean, he keeps ripping me off. I'm having to pay tax on, community tax on that. There's charges on this. I can't meet the payments on the mortgage. I've had enough of the game.
Yeah.
And you see, it's not just one person pulling out of the game. It's millions of people pulling out of the game simultaneously.
Yes, that's what excites. I loved when you were on the program before and you said, you know, soon people just, they don't go to that fairground anymore. You know, some might be looking in and they just walk by and they, you know, just, I'm not going to play that anymore. I'm not going to do that anymore.
Well, this is it. I mean, that analogy, which I've talks about in more detail in that lovely little graphic novel picture book I made, Kokoro, which is something I worked on since we last talked.
Not the dream journey. Now, what? Because you've got a couple projects, and I do want to touch on that too. With we've been putting your website in the chat, neilhaig.com, but also your dream journey book, and then you said you had another one out as well.
Oh, yeah, well, Journeys in the Dreamtime was an older book. That was something that I worked on a couple of years ago, which is an alternative history of art. Mm-hmm. It's very much a kind of facts and dates, and with obviously all of this stuff that I'm talking about interlaced within it. But the one that I've just been putting, that's just come out, is something that I've wanted to do for a while, and it's now there. It's a small graphic novel, a 32-page picture book with lots of text, and it illustrates that wonderful concept of leaving the fairgrounds we were talking about in the last chat. Mm. So it takes that, and it's full of pictures, and it's full of the idea. What I've tried to do, Michelle, I suppose, in a simple way, is I've tried to encapsulate the idea of the creation and evolution of consciousness, really. And I've looked at that from the alpha to the omega. And I'm using characters through the story, like the lion Kokoro, which in Japanese means heart, and how Kokoro emerges in the kind of Babylonian fairground world, and transforms the world. The world is run by a puppet master called Marduk, which is the old Babylonian father god figure that goes way, way back. But the Marduk, the puppet master, and the minions of that fairground structure, They're ruled by a consciousness which is a serpent, a great serpent called Nagar. I took the name from Indian mythology, and I've woven this into a new kind of understanding and a new myth. And myths, in that sense, are beautiful ways in which we can get certain truths across, because they carry a lot of validity in terms of vibration when you can get it down to the level of a story. Mm. So that's what I've tried to do, and it truly is a kind of weaving of things that would relate to the New Jerusalem, Blake's poem, through to Revelation. So there's things like that in there, and it's probably not really a children's book.
No, it doesn't. Well,
it's not really a children's book, but it's got children. You know, young adults would get a lot of fun out of looking at it, really, and looking at the picture, because the color carries vibration, and the imagery tells the story in their own right without even reading the text.
That's right. So, and what is the name of this novel?
Oh, this book is called Kokoro. K-O-K-O-R-O. Kokoro. And it's on the website. And it's the New Jerusalem and the Rise of the True Human Being.
Wow.
And it's, like I say, it's a small... You can get it on Amazon now, actually.
Can you? Okay, good.
Yeah, you can get it on Amazon if you need to.
So I think we have a link. We have a link on it on the Wakening site. Wakening's
okay. Wakening. It's a lovely little project in that sense. I got a lot of insight and fun into turning the story I was telling into picture form, which is something that I wanted to do, and it's taken a while to put that together, because I'm obviously working on other things at the same time. So, but Journeys in the Dreamtime, the other book you mentioned, that is a longer, more serious document that looks at these. Looks at different levels of reality, but looks at also a true understanding of the history of art, which is another subject in itself, really. But it really does track this idea of human or of consciousness, human consciousness. And that's what the history of art really is all about, Michelle. It's about tracking human consciousness from Neolithic times, to pre-linguistic, right through the Renaissance and up to the point where we're now in this period of multidimensionality, where there's multiple viewpoints. Mm-hmm. But what's held it together right at the center, quite rightfully so, has always been the imagination.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing that's, you say this, and there's other people said this over the course of history, but the imagination is the nearest thing we can get to godliness, to the infinite.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can't contain it.
No, not anymore. I think the thing is this has been around, but because the way that our picturing of our consciousness to these various forms that can connect us, just like we're doing just now, mm-hmm. you're seeing and feeling the exponential leaps, I think.
definitely. What would most would call God, just through this pure understanding, this correlation of true light,
So my question was, as we blipped again, is this part of the awakening?
Hello.
Neil.
You think somebody doesn't want me on the show?
I know, exactly. Take you personally, so someone's trying to pull the plug.
I only started talking about cosmic love, for goodness sake.
Right.
You know, and then
exactly.
You get disconnected.
Exactly. What I was asking, the question went out into the ether somewhere. Do you feel that this is a big part of the awakening, this cosmic love and this, maybe, I don't know if you want a deeper or more expanded connection or this remembering? Do you think this is a part of it?
Yeah, it is. I think what's happening is there's a genetic light coming, which relates to, it relates to a light, a thread of light that connects us to not only to who we are, really what we are, but also connects us to the stars. And when you look at the stars, I mean, in terms of their visual impact, some would say that it's illusionary. It's like looking at a planetarium. And in many ways it is, because of the holographic nature of the world that we live in. But from a spiritual viewpoint, we are stars.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at imagery of atoms, and you look at imagery of nebulas, and you look at the outer world and inner world, you know, the microcosmic and macrocosm, we are part of this genetic light, or a genetic message that is getting through to us, because ultimately that's what our DNA is anyway. It's a receiver of information. It's crystalline at its core. It's a crystal. And we actually create the world we live in through this light, and how this light interpenetrates with our DNA. And that's why things change and fluctuate throughout history, based on either the genetic message getting through, or based on forces that would want to keep us within the eggshell for their own purpose, now, which is, you know, something else. So the whole idea of the human body, for me, and is connected to the what we call the supercosmos, the antimatter.
Mm-hmm.
Positive and negative, the duality of reality. I mean, dualism is the most wonderful symbol that you'd see in the Ouroboros, the serpent swallowing its tail.
Mm-hmm.
That's the classic.
For cosmic consciousness, you have to call in via Skype. I think that is the deal. That it's not doing it.
Hello?
Neil?
Hello, it has to be
next
Ellie,
time Skype, huh?
Should we try Skype?
Yeah, can you call in on via Skype?
I'm not sure if I can, actually. It's something I've not done before. I'm not such a technophobe, really. I've got Skype, but I'm not sure. Is it that you think that's disconnecting us continuously, just the technology?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
The blips. It seems to be a more stable connection when people are calling in on the switch. But even with that, it depends. Sometimes there is the odd blip. We had Wednesday, we had wind storms here. Huge. I mean, palm fronds were flying all over the place. And so
right.
The internet was going out on that. But It seems...
I'm not sure about Skype, Michelle. It's not something I could say I could do. I mean, Skype to Skype maybe, but not dialing in on it. I'm not so sure how that works. So.
Oh, that works.
I mean, maybe we should keep talking until we get cut off.
Let's see where we go.
I don't know. But I was just saying that this idea of heavy light, it relates to the what the alchemists call the sacred cinema, the seven faces of God that has been talked about in other books. And it's the idea of the essence of who we are. Right at the center, we have this projection system, which is, in my view, and from what I've been doing recently, I think this projection system is why the sun has been worshipped throughout the ages.
Mm. Well, now, in a sense, we are that solar system, that galaxy. I mean, that is an aspect of us, or that's...
That's right.
Right?
That's right. Solar consciousness is part of what we are, and we also have other understandings of who we are as well. But the sun, and in terms of light, in terms of magnetic light, is a consciousness in itself,
mm-hmm.
and we have that consciousness within us. And I think very much it's linked to the pineal gland. It's linked to the understanding of how we truly see, how we don't see.
Mm-hmm.
While we're blind to the truth and the idea in the scriptures of being blind and then being born blind,
mm-hmm.
and then being healed,
mm-hmm.
The idea of the crucifixion taking place on Golgotha, which is the skull. The Golgotha is the skull. The idea of the mind. Yeah, Golgotha is the skull hill. It relates to the mind. It relates to the structure that encases the mind. And when you have the two thieves either side of Christ symbolically in the story, you have also the two ravens either side of Odin in Celtic mythology, and both ravens relate to memory and thought.
Mm.
It's taking place in the mind. So that there is a death of the mind for Christ consciousness, which is above and is solar consciousness, and above and beyond that to come through and dominate rather than being led by the mind.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
So
instead of led by the mind, you're led by consciousness.
You're led by consciousness, but not only consciousness, you're led by the heart, because the heart has more intelligence in it than the mind could possibly have, especially when you're looking at it from this viewpoint. I mean, I know for a fact that science talks about the idea of the heart sending more signals.
Oh, yeah.
Than the mind.
I went to the premiere of The Living Matrix, and covered it for Awakenings Radio, and Hartmath was there, the director of Noetic Science, and they just showed all this research of the heart having more receptors and sensors than actually the brain, and that the heart actually gets the information first, relays it to the brain, and then the brain relays back. So there's this dot between heart and brain initiated from the heart, which I found interesting. Other thing that I found interesting, Neil, and it ties into something that you were saying, is that they were talking about that one of the forms of light and energy is information. And they were... qualifying that the new medicine, the cutting edge medicine, they're calling it information medicine.
Mm.
And that it's about disrupting information that the body is receiving and the mind is receiving that perhaps is no, maybe they said good, I would say life enhancing, no longer life enhancing. And supplementing that, or supplanting that actually, with information that is life enhancing. So to me, it's like an art piece too. What are you getting? You know, we have the information highway now, the internet. It's all about content and information and weeding out the information that's relevant or life enhancing, as I like to say.
I mean, what you say is very true in that sense. From what I understand, and light is. I was channeling things as such, and I was writing things down in notebooks and sketchbooks. Light is something that is coming into the world. Mm-hmm. Not light as we understand light in the physical sense, electromagnetic light, but this higher light.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that relates. I mean, the best way to probably explain it would be just to talk a little bit about something that is slightly historical. But you've heard of the Cathars in southwestern France, and it's something that is dear to me in terms of the period. And there's been a lot of rubbish written about the Cathars, especially from a New Age perspective. But
that they were warring or whatever, warring and.
Yeah, but they were kind of, you know, they were a sect in themselves. But the reason why I bring it up and mention it in relationship to light is because I think what was happening there, symbolically, was there was this emergence, a re-emergence in truth, but there was an emergence of light. That's why the actual place was called the Languedoc, and from what I've understood, the language of light, Languedoc, Oc is a...
Wow.
It is a, it's one of those words that relate light. It's the AK or the OC. And in terms of the glyph, it looks like the glyph for the heron or the phoenix in Egyptian symbolism. And the phoenix emerges out of the fire, out of that light. And so the Cathars, which were Bogomil kind of Palestinian. There were a whole mixture of range of people in that area that had come there to the Languedoc, and they were basically the New Age of the the 10th, 9th, 10th, 11th century, 10th century, into the 11th century, and then predominantly coming to their demise in the 12th century. And the reason why I'm mentioning this is because the idea that they were practicing this understanding of the true nature of life through the teachings of who they call Jesus Christ, the man, and not the idol,
right?
In that sense, and they were living like him. I mean, there's different levels and layers to it. They weren't all as perfect as he made them themselves to be out to be. A lot of them were kind of obsessed with anorexia, you know, to a point where they would slowly, you know, eat nothing, to a point where they would pass over in some historical context. But in others, they were preaching on the streets. The preachers were mainly women in the first part of the century, and vegetarian, and they believed that to take on an embodiment of this light was to live your life in this true light, which would be the only reason for living. You know, in other words, all the worldly goods, everything, material wealth, all these things that Christ, talked about, were not important. And we've come a long way from that in that sense. But they saw the world, the outer world, as being a hell-like structure where the true light would not or could not resonate unless they'd actually opened their heart to receive.
Yeah.
This light now.
And do you think we're going towards that now?
I think there's an emergence. That's why I'm mentioning the story, because what's happening now is, and it's obviously, you know, you can't pin this down to one area anymore, because everything,
right.
As we get aware of ourselves, as we become globally aware, collectively, you know, the 100th monkey syndrome and the idea of collective consciousness. None of this is now in isolation in any one part of the world. It's everywhere. Whereas at that time, it may well have been predominant in that part of the world,
right.
But it was also going on in places like Native America, or, you know, the American Indians had an understanding of this. So did the Aborigines and African tribes, and so on and so on. But because it's part of our Western culture and Western history, it's been marked. There's been a marker put against it. The Renaissance, actually, the Cathar, the movement in that area was the birthing point for the Renaissance eventually, because of the way in which music and creativity and love and the idea of culture was embroidered within this understanding of true light. So
we're getting to now this is interesting to me, because in a sense what I hear you saying, we're getting to the true light. So if we're going beyond the electromagnetic, we're going beyond duality, then we're going beyond the polarity.
Yeah, we're going beyond polarity, which is very much this, it applies to every level of our life, doesn't it, Michelle? The idea of night and day, and left and right, and
yeah.
You know, positive and negative. Now, there's a wonderful, there's lots of teachings about the end of duality, but there's this lovely Buddhist understanding that the end essence, or what we would call God, the infinite, placed a small portion of itself in every living thing,
mm-hmm.
everything.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea that we're in pursuit of this essence. And on a greater level, that is why the sun pursues the moon on a very simple level, because we're looking for this unification of this essence
mm-hmm.
within each of us, which creates the cycles and the duality that we have in life all around us. You know, in terms of nature and the idea of winter becoming, you know, spring and then summer and so on and so on. And if you look at the ancient art, and you look at look at particularly Bronze Age art,
mm-hmm.
especially in the Americas, in the Hopi tradition and the Southwest, a wonderful part of the world, one of my favorite parts of the world, the Southwest of America, something that I've only ever flown over, to be honest, and I've only ever seen it from the air about 15 times, but I swear I'm going to stop off at some point and base myself there. All of that area, and the artwork and the markers and the cave paintings, they speak of this measuring of the change of the ages and the understanding of time coming to an end and the migrations and the, you know, the stories. I mean, you must have, your listeners will know, they will have looked at these probably in great detail. The idea of Koko Pele, the god of light, the god
light.
Of life.
Yeah,
life, and
life itself.
Life itself. Well, I think to be a... an interesting glyph when you look at him on different levels. I once befriended a wonderful photographer, a dear friend who I haven't seen for quite a few years now, who had a Hopi connection, and was telling me all sorts of these wonderful things that relate to the symbolism of this. But when you look at Koko Pele, he's actually not only the hunchback, sort of flute player, which is kind of one thing. There's also an insect-like mantis figure when you turn the glyphs upside down in certain places. And another side to this, which is equally fascinating, is that Koko Pele is always predominantly seen rising out of the head of a deity called Masuwa, the god of death, to the Hopi.
Mm-hmm.
And this rising out of the, you know, up the body, out of the head, is this idea that life is releasing itself, not from the mind, it's coming through the head, it's the mind cleansing itself in that sense. And it's also a symbol of overriding the mind, whereas the death deity is something else. It's another, a necessity as we enter this reality and this age that we've been in for the best part of how many years? I don't know, 8,000 years, probably, you know, since the time of the, what we call the great civilization of Atlantis and all these other subjects.
Mm-hmm.
So Masuwa is this kind of pumpkin-headed death deity, which incidentally is what Halloween is all about,
we're
on the subject, because the idea of Halloween and the thinning of the veil and the what we call the invisible forces of the other worlds, the idea of ghosts and ghouls and Death Eaters in the Harry Potter context, all these things that are unseen being symbolized to various forms, but one of the symbols was the skull, and the skull became the pumpkin, the squash head of the, you know, of that tradition, and lighting up the head from within is the idea of lighting the inner world, or making the inner world come into the outer world. And so, interestingly enough, you have these festivals like Halloween, and you have these festivals that relate to other religion, to Christian religion, with the crucifix. And what I found studying the history of art, Michelle, is how much this crops up within the iconography and the imagery of various painters and Renaissance painters and brotherhoods that go back to the Renaissance in a Western historical timeline, but actually they go back to the petroglyphs and the cave paintings.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I mean, one of the most fascinating things I saw was an image of Koko Pele in his winter disguise, which was a marker for the winter solstice, somewhere in New Mexico. And he was in his winter disguise, which is called Cottontail. Cottontail obviously symbolizes the idea of the rabbit or the hare as well. But the way in which he looked in terms of an image was of this old man with a stick, kind of bent over with a cloak, and and this was placed on a rock in New Mexico somewhere like some sort of gap. I can't remember the name, Comanche Gap or something. And this was to denote the sun at its lowest point, as the sun is entering the cave, because at that point the sun is actually going inwards, you know, as we enter into that cycle, to be born again eventually on the solstice and rise again. And that's where, from that point onwards, we have the nights getting longer and longer in terms of the cycles. But interestingly, when you see that image and you look at some of the alchemical imagery, and then when I stumbled across some of William Blake's imagery, we have a very similar image of Father Time, dressed in white, the old man with the walking stick entering the cave. And this was, 18th century, 17th century alchemical illustration. Now, those guys, those artists, wouldn't have had any understanding of the Bronze Age petroglyph that was carved into the rock in New Mexico. This is consciousness.
It's consciousness.
This is pure consciousness. This is symbolic imagery. People speaking, consciousness speaking through symbols, that it goes over time, it transits time, and it appears in different cultures. And it's so connected to how we actually communicate, or how we used to communicate, even so much that, there's all these kind of lessons today in classes that you can take your babies to and kiddies to learn to speak in sign and symbols, because that's why they have frustrated toddlers that, can't communicate what they, but a baby can speak with a symbol or a hand symbol, that when they know they want milk or they want other things. And this is the natural language that goes back to the pre-linguistic period, and consciousness speaks through symbols. And that is why symbols are used massively within advertising and within all of these other areas in politics, because the people that run those structures understand that know that our subconscious can read symbols.
And this, to me, what you're sharing here, Neil, is why we need to update our symbols, our art, our language. I feel we're in a whole up-leveling or updating, that we have to have the imagery that really is more in alignment to the context of what we're actually experiencing and expressing, those for people to connect into even on the surface mind, and even beyond that, on kind of a visceral collective level. But also that, so when you look at certain things or digest certain things, you begin to reconnect perhaps with that part of ourselves that you were talking about earlier.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. The idea of not only creating our personal mythology, which is individual and collective, we're having to almost go back to the archetypes, and I'm talking purely from an artistic point of view now. Mm-hmm. We're going back to the archetypes, which take us back to consciousness. It's like taking back layers of an onion skin, going inwards, till we get to that point where we're defining the true essence of who we are. And we're doing that, and as we're doing that, we're coming across the symbols, and we're seeing new symbols that are not really new. They relate to the understandings that our ancestors had, and our distant relatives. I think what's going to happen on one level is that we are going to have new findings. I mean, what's going to happen in the next few years, I feel intuitively, that what we thought was the mysteries are actually going to be revealed. And our understanding of Antis is going to be revealed.
Yeah.
I mean, there are wonderful, there are going to be some wonderful books, coming out in the next, one in particular next year. There's things coming out all the time.
Yeah.
So and there's millions of books being published on various subjects, and I'm not saying for a minute that that we're all of a sudden it's going to be realized with one book.
No.
But what I'm saying is that we're in that period now where what was once hidden is coming to the surface, and it even means if it was bad, we're going to see.
That's right.
It's not all about everything being hunky-dory.
No.
Things that we didn't like about ourselves are coming to the surface, and what we didn't like about ourselves are the things that have been holding us back the things that we've been doing to ourselves, if we could see ourselves from outside of this physical body, we'd go, oh my God, what have we been doing?
Yeah, has to be that next. That's that next. That's that next level or step. Well, we got a caller, 216-551. You're on Awakenings.
How you doing? I'm Paradox in the chat room.
Hello. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Yeah. Some of the things that you guys have talked about are some of the things Allison talked about as well. One of the things that you kind of up against is, you know, it's the projections of society, because you know, society, you know, gives you these ideals of what is acceptable of a person and what you should be. And, you know, if you don't fall within these guidelines, you're taught that, you know, something is wrong with you. And even, too, if you go as far as some of these religions where you're given the idea that you are born imperfect and that, you know, You have to meet these criteria, you know, of a rating scale to be something that you weren't even designed to be in the first place. So you're always going to fall short of this measuring stick. You know, even a diamond would seem imperfect if you hold it up to the scale of a ruby. And, you know, and we're taught to try to be something other than what we truly are.
Good point. Now, Neil, do you think we're pulling back that, though? I feel like there might be an uncovering of this.
Yeah, I think what your listener just said is absolutely true. And what's happening is that we are, in many ways, this is how I see it, we're shedding the layers of ourselves, which break down into everyday living as you can't do this. You can't go there. You know, if you do that, what will your mother think? Or how will you, you know, how are you going to pay for your rent? How are you going to, you know, how are you going to get by? And all these conditions, as the listener said, all these conditions that are coming at us are more often than not pre-programmed. We're living in a world full of programs. And the mind is a computer that harbors the programs, like files on a hard drive. And what we're doing is we're taking a look at them, we're unpacking them, and little by little, we are up against things, but at the same time, we're not, because once we step out of that fear of worrying about what other people think of us ultimately, but also the idea of the conditioning, which is something that I could have followed the conditioning of my life quite easily. I mean, I grew up in a very loving background, to very loving parents, from a very typical working class background in the northern part of the UK, and I could have gone through the program of continuing and living in that way. And what I've done, like millions of other people do when they break the paradigm, is they go and they do something else with their life. But there's many levels and many layers to it. So we're continuously deprogramming. We're continuously looking at ourselves in that sense. And what we have to do, I feel, is we have to step out of the fear that is the control mechanism. We have to say, this is what I want to be. This is who I am. And we have to live that. And we have to live by example. And I think that's coming. That time is coming where people will stop living a half-life. There's actually a great computer game called Half-Life. Mm. They'll stop living that life and they'll start living a true life. A full life based on maybe losing everything that they had before, which isn't a bad thing, because a lot of the things we have had before and what we have now are in many ways bringing us great pain, suffering.
Right.
So I'm being told I've got 60 seconds.
Yes, I hear
you. I don't know if that's true or not. I don't know.
It is true. This time it's true.
Yeah.
Well, Paradox, thank you so much for that great feedback and input. Thank you so much for calling in.
No, I've enjoyed it. I love it. I'll come back whenever you like, and you know, and it's been lovely speaking to you again. So you know,
well,
yeah,
definitely do it again, and get the phone thing. I'll call you ahead of time. We'll get the phone thing down. But anyway, we have been speaking with and getting some amazing insight from Neil Haig, and you can reach him at Neil Haig. com, and that's NEILHAGUGE.com. Did I get it right, Neil? Perfect. And Paradox, thank you so much for calling in. And listener, participants in the chat, and oh, all those who will be listening to the archives later, thank you so much for your support and all the emails, all the insight, all the feedback that you share here at Awakenings Radio. It is so appreciated. You are the reason that Awakenings is here, actually. And if you'd like to keep in touch with me, you can via awakeningsradio@gmail.com for Starseed news, just kind of keeping abreast of the happenings that are taking place, guests coming on as well, and also on Facebook at Awakenings Radio, and many of you know on Twitter at Awakenings Tweet. So really, just connect in. It's wonderful to connect with all of you. And as always, until next time, continue to shine your light, share your insight, and keep awake.